Pretty much everything we touch turns to wastewater. If we drink it, wastewater. If we wash our clothes in it, wastewater. If we water our fields with it, wastewater. Why do humans have such a massive impact on the water cycle? Michelle Baker is a biology professor at Utah State University. She doesn't claim to be a wastewater expert, but she definitely knows the importance of understanding what happens to the water that passes through our bodies and our lives every day.
No one knows what it was that made them go. Explore the dark, dark water.
How do you know so much about wastewater and what's in it?
Well, my area of expertise is in stream and river ecology and primarily focusing on nutrient cycles in streams and rivers. And one of the sources of nutrients to streams and rivers comes from treated effluent that comes from our wastewater systems.
I mean, it's kind of a shame that a stream ecologist has to know so much about wastewater.
I think everybody needs to be concerned about wastewater. I don't think most people know what happens when they flush their toilet, where it goes.
So where does it go?
It goes through this amazing infrastructure that has existed since Roman times in some places to facilities that work to remove the solids from the wastewater so that it doesn't negatively impact downstream water bodies.
I think a lot of people understand that the solids get taken out. Then there's still some liquid left, and that's not the end of the process, right? So what's left in that liquid and what other processes happen before that goes back into the stream?
Well, it depends on the kind of treatment system. So a primary wastewater treatment gets out about 40 to 50% of the solids, and then a secondary treatment system gets out most of the rest. And what's left is all the stuff that's dissolved in the water, which can contain contaminants like metals and pharmaceuticals and personal care products, as well as nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus. Nutrients are not considered toxic by most standards. They're materials that are in the environment that are required for living systems. So the nutrients that we study in my lab are things like nitrogen, which is important in making proteins, and phosphorus, which is involved in making DNA and fats and cell membranes and things like that.
So our local sewage system here in Logan, after it goes through the wastewater treatment plant and through the settling ponds and all the lagoons and everything, at the end of the line, it goes back into the Bear River at Cutler Reservoir. And because of new water quality standards, they are out of compliance for phosphorus and ammonia. Is too much of a good thing a bad thing? Is that what's going on with the nutrients?
Right. Too much of a good thing can be bad. And so when there are excess nutrients, there could be unintended consequences. In Utah, some of those unintended consequences include things like algal blooms. A couple of summers ago, there was a toxic algal bloom in Utah Lake that caused some dogs to die.
From drinking the water or going in it?
Well, the dog probably did drink the water, but the algae that bloom under those high nutrient conditions produce these chemicals called cyanotoxins, which can be neurological or harm the liver, and in some cases cause paralysis or death, like in the case of that dog.
So how are we adding all those extra nutrients into the streams and lakes and into the water cycle?
In a number of ways. First, we do discharge treated effluent into streams and rivers, which carry with them nitrogen and phosphorus. Agricultural runoff from fields and whatnot can add nutrients to water bodies. Atmospheric deposition can contribute some amount of nutrients to water.
That's like dust.
Dust and materials dissolved in the precipitation itself. So there's wet and dry deposition.
So wastewater, I mean, it's easy to think about what goes into our toilets as being wastewater, but we're also talking about water that runs through the streets when it rains. All of the water that sort of goes through our lives, that goes through a city, is considered wastewater. Is that correct?
That's correct. So water that passes, I like to call it a human filter, whether it's our body directly or the systems that we operate.
I heard you say something recently that made me feel a little bit guilty, and that was about pet waste.
Pet waste, yes.
Because I'm really good about picking up after my pet if I know
that it's something somebody might step in. I feel like that's being a good neighbor. But it's not a really good idea to leave pet waste anywhere for water, right?
Right, yeah. So when your pet leaves his deposit behind in the canal, or not in the canal, in the gutter.
Sometimes in the canal. It's happened.
Make sure you clean it up, because that does contribute to nutrient loading. I used to live in France for a year, about 20 years ago, and I would walk to work, and about every meter there was a dog turd. And I just thought, wow, that would be a really great research project.
I want to go back to the nutrient cycle, because I think it's really interesting, and that's what you focus on. Can you just sort of take us through some of the primary nutrients that are found in water and that we need for life, and sort of how that life cycle works?
Sure. So nitrogen occurs in forms that are inorganic, so things that are salts, like potassium nitrate. Could be a fertilizer that you could buy. And that nitrate is a plant available form that can be absorbed by its roots and contribute to the growth of that plant. So that plant will then use that nitrogen to make its tissues, and that converts it into an organic form. And the other end of the nutrient cycle is when that plant material decays, it releases the nitrogen back into an inorganic form that can then be used again. So in terms of how the water cycle impacts that process, can be as a way of transporting inorganic nutrients to other locations, for example, a receiving lake or a reservoir like Cutler, where then the algae and microbes that live in that reservoir then cycle those materials. The Logan River itself has covered with a biofilm on the rocks. And that is part of what makes the Logan River a healthy river. We like to have rivers with biofilms, because those biofilms act like a trickle filter in your aquarium to remove the inorganic nutrients that could cause harm to fish, for example, ammonia, and keep it locked up in the biofilm.
Biofilms are basically like the slippery stuff on rocks that
right,
make it slippery, hard to walk across
exactly,
the stream.
Exactly. So it's the slippery stuff on rocks. And it's a community of bacteria and fungi and algae that work together to purify the water that flows through the river. So a lot of the work that my group has done in the past is trying to understand the role of that biofilm relative to the role of transport of nutrients to downstream receiving waters.
So when you look into a stream and you see some green waving stuff at the bottom of the stream, that's not necessarily bad.
It's not necessarily bad. If it's an overgrowth of algae, it can become a nuisance. But walking across a stream and slipping is a good thing.
And what about when you look at a stream or a pond and there's green bubbly stuff floating on the top of the stream?
I would tend to say that it's probably... I would have to look at the stream, but if it's a lot, I would think, oh, this is a poor, sad stream that needs some help.
A clean stream isn't necessarily pure, clean water with nothing in it, right?
I mean, right.
Streams are supposed to be a little bit dirty and a little bit green and a little bit fuzzy.
Yeah. I was hiking in Colorado several years ago and came across this stream, and was one thing that I always do is I pick up rocks and look for bugs and stuff like that. And the rocks were not slippery at all. And I looked on a map and learned that it was near an acid mine drainage. So it was a sad stream with nothing in it.
What should we be doing to protect our rivers from this human filter that it goes through? I mean, it has to go through, and we rely on rivers and streams for so many aspects of our lives. How can we be responsible for what happens on the other end?
Well, I think the first thing to do is to be aware of the impact that our activities have on rivers and streams and lakes, and to make choices to mitigate those impacts, whether it's cleaning up after your dog or sweeping off your driveway after you put your winter fertilizer on your lawn, to not putting a bunch of food scraps down the garbage disposal, that all those kinds of things can help protect our streams and rivers and lessen the impact of those things on them.
What happens to our food scraps when they go down the garbage disposal?
Well, they go into the wastewater treatment plant, and those guys work really hard to clean up our human waste. But, I mean, that food material that goes down the garbage disposal, it's food for bacteria, and it has nitrogen and phosphorus and who knows what else in it that they've got to treat.
I guess it probably even has more nutrients in it because our bodies
sure
take some of that nutrients out before it goes into the toilet.
Yeah.
So what are you working on right now? What is your current sort of research project?
In terms of the active research projects that we have right now, I'm working with a graduate student named Beth Ogata in the biology department and an undergraduate student named Donald Long, who's at Southern Utah University. And we're trying to understand the effect of certain pharmaceutical products on how biofilms in streams work. And this summer we did an experiment where we grew biofilms that were exposed to diphenhydramine, which is the main ingredient in the over-the-counter drug Benadryl, and caffeine. So an upper and a downer. We gave them a couple of choices there to see what the impact of those chemicals was on the growth of algae and bacteria in streams around Utah. And we don't have our results all pretty so far, but what we found is that there's a substantial decrease in the rate of photosynthesis that the algae are doing. And we're trying to understand if there are changes to the microbial community by looking at using some genomics to see who's there and if it changes.
When we talk about pharmaceuticals in effluent, are we talking about people throwing pills in the trash or down the drain or flushing them down the toilet? Or are we talking about what happens to pharmaceuticals after they go through our bodies?
It's both. So certain pharmaceuticals are not fully metabolized, and so they're excreted, and that contributes to the pharmaceutical load. People do dump their extra pills and stuff down the toilet, and that contributes to the load. So yeah, both of those things. And it's bad for the microbes that live in the wastewater treatment plant.
Yeah, I guess, especially like even antibiotics and stuff are probably not good for that.
Yeah, and there's some evidence that it contributes to antibiotic resistance in the environment.
And that probably includes like antibiotic hand wash and things like that. So
yeah, we want that the compound that's in those things is called triclosan. And we wanted to use triclosan as one of our treatments, but we couldn't get it to dissolve in the substance that we are trying to use to expose it to them, so we weren't able to do that. But yeah, it's...
If it's not dissolving in your substance, I wonder how well it's dissolving in the natural system.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me.
That was biologist Michelle Baker, who studies stream ecology and the delicate balance of nutrients that impact water quality. More wastewater stories are coming up after a short break.